Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Today I'm speaking with Richard Metzger, the co-founder of the disinformation company which promotes iconoclastic ideas and fringe culture. Stay tuned for a provocative discussion. I'm speaking today with Richard Metzger, who's the co-founder of the disinformation company, which started several years ago, disinfo.com, which led to the TV series Disinformation on Channel 4 in England, and now to the book Disinformation, The Interviews, which is a record of some of the interviews that Richard conducted with his guests on that TV series. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
I understand you have pneumonia.
Yeah, I think we should probably warn the listeners that I might be coughing a little bit. Maybe you can edit those out.
Sure. You haven't been to Hong Kong recently, I hope.
No, I don't think it's SARS. It's just a bit of a chest cold.
Given the nature of your media empire, I suppose SARS was one of the first things that came to your mind.
I think it's the first thing that comes to anybody's mind these days when they've got a chest cold.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the origin of the Disinformation TV series, and I want to hear about how you went through guest selection. Since I'm in the biz myself, I'm curious about how you did that. But tell us how you came to do this show.
Right. Well, the show grew out of the website that we've been doing since '96, and I had been doing a an internet interview show at a now defunct place called Pseudo. com, and I did that for about 3 years, and it was a real video show. It was also on cable TV in New York, and an executive from Channel 4 named Stephen Keen saw that show and wanted to develop a Channel 4 show out of it, and so we did, and the show aired in 2000 and 2001, right after Ally McBeal, which if anybody's familiar with what exactly we did in that show, they'll know that that was a very odd place to put the disinformation show, because I'm sure it freaked out a lot of the Ally McBeal fans. And the guests, in many cases, were friends of mine. The show the topics were underground culture, shall we say, extreme culture, outsider art, unusual scientist, and things of this nature, cult authors, even some rock stars, and computer programmers who do unusual things were on the show. So it was kind of like a punk rock 60 Minutes.
Why did the show get canceled?
Because it's very common in the UK that you only do two series. It's not like it is here. It's not like they don't expect anything to go on and on. The biggest hits sometimes only have 5 episodes.
So what wasn't really the controversial content that got it discontinued?
Oh, no, not at all. It's a matter of course. I mean, something like Ally G, for instance, is on an HBO over here. That was on in the late 90s in the UK, and I think he only did 10 shows total over 2 years. Hmm. I did 16, so.
Tell us about the origins of the website. How did you come to start disinfo.com?
Well, it grew out of an earlier idea for a television show, which I was flogging around Hollywood in the early 90s, and at one of these meetings, a guy said to me, "Gosh, I'd love to see a show like this, but it'll never get on," you know. And and then he let out a little slip. He said, "You know, you should get somebody like Oliver Stone to put their name on this." And indeed, I did contact Oliver right after that. In fact, later that day. He put his name on as executive producer, and we shopped it around without success. And a few years later, when the interactive age starts, the age of the internet, even before actually, it was when CD-ROMs were around. Oliver Stone was doing another project with a company called And Interactive in Los Angeles, and he basically put me up for the job of producer. He needed somebody to be his sort of point person within that company. And when the CD-ROM thing the market didn't really take off, and the internet was starting to evolve to a commercial entity at that point. This is about 1995. I was asked, would I like to take this television idea, again, this punk rock 60 Minutes, and sort of make it a web property? And I said, yes, thank you. So, came out of that.
Now, the subtitle of the Disinfo Empire is Everything You Know Is Wrong. And so you're kind of professional iconoclast, political and social iconoclast. Is there a meta-political agenda to iconoclasm? Don't you find that, in general, debunking the perceived wisdom is actually also putting yourself in opposition to the rich and powerful, or is it truly metapolitical?
Metapolitical. How do you mean? How do you mean metapolitical?
I mean, is it? Are you beyond left and right, or don't you find that?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I don't. I think ideas are ideas. I find it very laughable when people describe themselves as a Republican or as a Democrat. Or it seems like a strange thing, because I can understand why someone might feel pride of race or religion, but to be, you know, to be like, hey, I'm a Fox News viewer or something like this, just seems a bit absurd to me. So what we try to do is, you know, the old saying goes, if there's two sides to every story and the truth is somewhere in the middle, what we try to do with the website is to link to a wide variety of news sources that might be left, right, and center, and wacko, for that matter. You know, there might be some very out there opinions, and so the truth starts to emerge within that continuum. I mean, the idea is, and the agenda is not to say, oh, here's the truth, we have the truth, or anything like that. It's to say, well, do these people necessarily know what they're talking about, or how do you expose the bias of news organizations, you know, such as Fox? I mean, the idea that they're an unbiased news network is patently absurd in the face of it. But many people don't understand that concept at all.
But the fact that you would pick on Fox, I mean, doesn't that indicate that you have the way that you perceive the world, that mm-hmm. your attempt to search for some kind of epistemological grounding for your own viewpoint,
sure,
indicates that Fox is a little bit more extreme than CNN, and that indicates where you're coming from.
Well, I think that you could. I mean, I think objectively you could look at that and say that was the case. I mean, it's clearly an ideologically. The ideology behind the Fox News Network is well defined. CNN is less well defined. I don't think you could call CNN liberal, but you could certainly not call Fox liberal.
Right, but I think for some right wing Republicans, they would think that, you know, Fox is objective and CNN is left wing extremism. And I'm just it's this whole problem of the epistemology of kind of mm-hmm. iconoclasm. I think that as soon as you wade into this, you expose your own beliefs. Like, aren't there any particular conspiracies that you've been convinced of wading through all this conspiracy theory stuff?
No, not really. I'm not really I think you have to depends on how you define it. If you're talking about like UFOs and things like that, no, not really. If you're talking about things which can be historically verified and are a matter of, you know, some cases public record, well, then, yeah, there are things that I've been convinced of. But, you know, I think you have to really separate the wheat from the chaff, I think, and when you delve into sort of what people call conspiracy theory, because it's very murky territory, basically. And what I've found, for the most part, I mean, you know, this is what I do professionally. I interview people who are proponents of conspiracy theories and so forth. And it's very interesting to meet these people after you've read their books. And something which can appear authoritative and somewhat sound on the printed page, you know, sometimes when you meet these people, it's like not really necessarily a case of shoot the messenger, but in some cases the people behind these conspiracy theories are so crazy and so, you know, sort of, you know, marginal in the way that they live their lives, or, you know, the way that they relate to other people, you can't help but to come to some conclusion that, if the messenger is this seemingly strange or wacko, maybe you want to look at what they say and take it with a grain of salt.
I'm surprised by your depiction of your... You seem very sympathetic with most of your guests, you know, with their fringeness. And
sure. Well, the ones that are in the book, you know, are people who are friends of mine, and I think they're people whose ideas deserve to be taken seriously. Not all of the things that were in the show, for instance, made it into the book. And when I'm talking about conspiracy theorists, I did a piece about the Montauk Project, if you're familiar with that.
No.
Conspiracy theory. Well, it's a there are about 7 or 8 books out in the Montauk Project series. And what it is it purports to be this massive experiment in mind control and time travel that's taking place in an underground bunker off the northeasternmost tip of New York's Long Island in Montauk Point. And these books sell, they sell about 100,000 copies. I would guess that all of them have sold that much, but maybe more. I don't know. But it's something that you find quite readily when you start looking into conspiracy theories. And that was one. And the people behind it were just, I mean, it was amusing, shall we say, to deal with them. And it's quite a funny piece. And I don't necessarily try to editorialize too much when I do these things. I let them talk. And what and I then end up cutting it in such a way they're like mockumentaries, like Spinal Tap, right?
Yeah.
So there's that kind of element to it, or like American Movie, if you're familiar with that film. And and then another person was Bryce Taylor, if you've heard of her. She's a woman who claims that she was a mind controlled sex slave of the CIA. And her book starts off when she's 11 years old and she's having sex in an elevator with JFK. Yeah, oh yeah. She basically claims to have had sex with every U.S. president between Kennedy and the first George Bush.
I don't even want to think about that.
Yeah.
I'm talking.
So you know what I'm saying? It's like, I mean, you know, that's conspiracy theory with quotes around it, whereas, you know, political history, things that can be verified, I mean, it's something else entirely.
Right.
To me.
I'm speaking with Richard Metzger. He's the co-founder of the Disinformation Company. It runs the disinfo.com website. It's published two books, Everything You Know Is Wrong, and what's the other title?
We published about 9 books, actually.
Not about 9 books, but
yeah.
Everything You Know Is Wrong is one of them, and then you the Disinformation Guide, and then this Disinformation, the Interviews, which is based on the TV series that you did
right
for Channel 4 in England, which is now owned by Sci-Fi Channel, and they're never going to play it, huh?
No, they don't own it. Actually, they bought it, and they spent an awful lot of money on it, and in the end, they opted not to do it, and there was no contract, so they actually paid us money without having a contract, and in the end, they paid in full and took no ownership of it.
Bad lawyers.
Almost, like, no lawyers. You know,
wow.
No lawyers.
It
was an absurd situation.
Yeah.
For them. It was wonderful for me.
Yeah. Now, you have a background with magic, with an M-A-G-I-C-K, the Aleister Crowley version.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about how that background came about. And you seem like a very secular, rationalist kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
What's the utility for people who are secular or rationalist or both to explore this realm of magic?
Well, Crowley pronounced it magic, as to differentiate it from stage magic and course magic, that kind of thing,
and to emphasize the mage part of
exactly,
it.
Exactly. His goal was to take the spiritualism that was around during his time in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and to try to put this on scientific footing. The aim of science, the method of religion. The aim of religion, the method of science. I think that was what it was, and. So he would do experiments, he would keep careful diaries, and things like this. And that's sort of, you know, his idea of magic is that you can make something happen in the universe with the force of your own will power.
I was very influenced by a book by Aleister Crowley. I don't know if you've ever read it. It's his book about drug abuse. And the first third of the book is Heaven is Paradiso, and then it's... Diary of a Drug Fiend. And the whole theory of it was that if you just documented every single urge that you had to take drugs, you would eventually become so self-aware that you could overcome your addiction. And I was fascinated by that theory.
Well, it didn't happen for him.
He was a drug addict.
He died a drug addict. He died a heroin addict. Yeah. He was, despite what any biographer says, I mean, he was quite addicted to drugs till the end of his life. They prescribed it back then for asthma.
It seemed like a very Buddhist approach, though, a goal of complete self-awareness.
Sure, but I don't think it worked for him.
Mm. What, do you see magic as a method of self-technology, of psychological technology?
Sure, I see it metaphorically. If you view the universe as an alive place where there are certain energies that you could take advantage of or work with in that way, and incidentally, that's the way that William Burroughs describes it. Then I think that you open yourself to a much enriched intellectual space in your life.
Okay, let's switch topics for a second. And you're the head of this disinfo endeavor. We're in the midst of war fever.
Right.
What's the biggest lies that you think are being told about this war endeavor?
Well, I mean, gosh, that's an awfully big question, Dr. J. I mean, the you know, it's today, just now, it just popped up on the NewYorkTimes.com website before we got on the phone. It is talking about how they're going to. There will be four Air Force bases now, four military bases
in Iraq.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's what they're there for. You know, I mean, the idea that it was there for the liberation of the Iraqi people is patent nonsense at the face of it. It
so
had nothing to do with it.
Unlike the ones in Saudi Arabia, our women will be able to drive when they're stationed there.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, exactly. They're not. They're certainly not going to liberate the Saudis. That's for sure, from their theocracy. But so, you know, it's hard to pinpoint the lies because there are just so many big ones.
But you think that the nature of this war is clearly, I mean, again, this relates back to my previous question. I mean, if this war is all about something other than what its purported reason is, then it kind of leads to a natural political alignment with the, you know, the disenfranchised of the world kind of thing.
How do you mean?
Well, you know, like I think that George Bush and his cronies want to establish Pax Americana, and
sure,
and that the alternative is could be some kind of democratic world order. Now, that's where the disinfo, the epistemology of the disinfo empire, is different. That you don't, that you're post ideological in the sense that you wouldn't posit an alternative.
Well, you know, I look at it this way. I mean, I just think that people need to be better informed about all these kind of things. I mean, if you limit the variety and scope of your news sources, you're going to be impoverished intellectually, and you may believe that they're just there for, you know, for humanitarian reasons or so forth. But if, you know, if anybody that's looked at the history of the U.S. military establishment for the last 60 years. Would have a very hard time buying any of that stuff. I mean, you just have to be naive.
Well, drugs is another common topic on your site.
Sure.
Are you an advocate of drug legalization?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, some people who might posit a conspiracy theory might be equally suspicious of the motives behind drug legalization. I've certainly met black activists who think that drug legalization is an attempt to enslave, you know, African Americans, and look at the fact that there are right wingers who advocate it, who would be perfectly content if every African American was on heroin. So, you know, you see what I'm saying? That, you know, if you take a completely cynical view, a meta political cynical view, then it's kind of, it might be difficult to get behind anything.
Well, I think you got to pick and choose. I mean, how cynical you want to be about different things. I mean, you know, human beings, you know, human nature is what it is, you know, and I look at it this way. These people who are in power largely because they wanted to be. They are largely, you know, by and large, the same people we all went to high school and college with, and, you know, they're there because someone else didn't get there first or whatever else. I mean, you see what I'm saying? It's human nature. I think it's human nature to conspire. I think it's human nature to be greedy. I think it's human nature to look out for yourself before you look out for anyone else, and that seems to be the American way, at least for the last 25 years.
I'm Dr. Jay. You're listening to Change Surfer Radio. I'm speaking with Richard Metzger. He's the co-founder of the disinformation company that runs the disinfo.com website and has recently published Disinformation, the interviews based on the Channel 4 TV series that is now in limbo but is available on DVD. You know that this show is connected loosely to the transhumanist movement.
Sure.
And we're advocates of, you know, taking control of the body and changing human nature and so forth. What do you think of that transhumanist agenda? Are we making it boring? Is it not fringe enough to for your taste anymore?
I think it's quite fringy, actually. You know, these magazines like Extropian, is that what you're talking about?
Well, the Extropians are some of the pioneers of this, at least, yeah.
Right. No, I think it's good. I mean, I'm all for science, and you know, when you see these people that say science should be curtailed or curbed, or you know, stem cell research is dangerous and blah blah blah, you know, get real. You can never go back. I don't think scientifically, and it's not desirable in any way. These people who stand in the way of progress. I mean, it's those same people who, you know, I look at it this way. I mean, SARS is a great example of something that, if that, you know, gets out of hand, and it ends up being like the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918, and 2 million people worldwide die from it. You know, those same people that are against StealthSEM research are going to be saying to the scientists, "Why weren't you prepared?" You see what I'm saying? So it becomes this kind of like, I don't know how to put it. I mean, these sort of Luddite people are really, you know, by virtue of standing in the way of progress, they're also sort of standing in the way of, like, evolution, future life on this planet, everything else. I mean, we've got to continually come up with new strategies to preserve the species, because it's terra incognita. We don't know what's coming around at this point. The connectivity and these diseases, and, you know, that one person flying around the world could be patient zero and spread it so far.
One of the reasons why I've always been fascinated by conspiracy theory, and very much like the work that you do actually on that, I had my first college counselor was a Lyndon LaRouche cult member.
Oh, yeah.
And exposed me to some of their worldview. And although I was never really that attracted to it,
yeah.
One of the things about LaRouche that has always stuck with me is that if you squint at the proponents of Luddite political philosophy, of kind of romantic pastoralism around the world, they're all middle-class folks who are profoundly indifferent, or at least romantically indifferent, to the fate of the people who would be harmed if we adopted these Luddite policies. And so I think one of the advantages of examining things from a conspiracy theory point of view is that it actually can give you some kind of structural insight into where people's interests lie.
Mm-hmm. Well put.
Yeah. I also had a sociology prof in college who said that there are lots of conspiracies in the world. They just happen to all cancel each other out.
Well, the idea that there's one big conspiracy, I think, is quite absurd. It's a bunch of little ones. You know, this is the way the world works, in my never-so-humble opinion. I mean, these guys like, the idea that the Council on Foreign Relations is the Illuminati, or that Bohemian Grove is, you know, the site of these blood rituals and all these kinds of things that Henry Kissinger and these type of people are up to. But is it conspiracy, or is it just normal human nature that these people, they know each other, they're of the same social strata, they're of the same economic class, they belong to the same country clubs, they all live in Washington, D.C., you see what I'm saying, and their kids go to the same schools. It's, you know, these. I mean, do they conspire? Sure, they conspire. They conspire to enrich themselves or to do whatever they want to do. And these people have an easier time doing it than the rest of us because they have access to this level of power or have it themselves. And so I'm not really a big proponent of, like, the grand conspiracy theories, the Illuminati's, the this or that. But I do think that there are an awful lot of conspiracies going on. But they're criminal conspiracies. Like I say, I think these, you know, again, it goes back to things. Can it be historically verified? Can someone, you know, would the New York Times send a reporter to investigate this? It's not, you know, oh, some guy says a UFO landed in his restaurant in Nevada. So, you know, them seeing there's a big difference there.
Do you get hate mail from people who think that you're not taking the conspiracy seriously enough?
Sometimes, yeah, but not that often. I mean, what do you say to somebody like that? You know, there's just really no arguing with someone who's going to write, and they're almost always, you know, all caps, you know, kind of emails and swearing and all this kind of stuff, and we just don't even respond to it. It doesn't happen that often, actually. I would say it's probably 99% for, 1% against.
Hmm.
It's a very self-selecting audience. It's been around for long enough that, you know, I think somebody would come there, they would look at the trappings of it and say, well, this isn't really for me, go away, before they would stick around and decide to comment on it.
In Wired last month, there was a survey that asked people what percentage of them they, or what percentages they would give to the likelihood that we were living inside a simulation like the Matrix. And there was a good 20% of them who gave it a better than 50% chance.
Is that right?
Yeah. Which, funny. You know, took me back. Again, it's readers of Wired magazine who were willing to respond to the survey. It's not a representative sample, but
uh-huh.
It seems like there is an enormous well of incredulity at the nature of our world, you know, that things could really be this way. And I seems like you're tapping into that by saying, by your slogan, everything you know is wrong.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's an awful lot of news stories that just don't get reported in the mainstream media. The large books that we've put out, these disinfo anthologies, which is a new one actually called Abuse Your Illusion, again edited by Russ Kick. There's Everything You Know Is Wrong is the second one. The first one is called You're Being Lied To, and the new one is called Abuse Your Illusions. And there's between the covers of those books, there's probably a good 400 pages of, or more actually, because they're so big, the pages are so big, of stories that you really don't get anywhere else. Because and in some cases, they're written by Pulitzer Prize winners, like Sidney Shanberg, who couldn't get certain articles published anywhere. You know, Seymour Hersh, people like this.
What's the next big project for disinfo.com? Where do you see this endeavor being in 5 years?
Well, right now, we're talking. I just had a meeting in New York last week with MTV about doing a new show. And what I would like to do is to take, you know, the sort of brain trust that we've, have around us and who work with us, and to do a sort of a next generation of 60 Minutes type show. You know, these guys are all in their 70s, or most of them are at this point. And that's a great show and everything. I always watch 60 Minutes, but it can be done differently, and it can be updated, and it can be something that will, I think, be exciting for younger people to watch. And I think that despite the sort of rah-rah George Bush go pro-war attitude that you see generally, that's not everybody. And if 20% of the country didn't feel that way, that's a natural audience for a television show like that. And the response that we get to the books and everything, I think it does indicate that there's going to be there could be a very large television audience for us in the U.S. like there was in the U.K.
I've been speaking with Richard Metzger. Richard Metzger is the co-founder of the Disinformation Company. They published recently Disinformation, the interviews, and they're at disinfo.com, the website. You've got a newsletter that people can subscribe to there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for joining us, Richard.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is Emily Dickinson's poem, Much Madness is Divinest Sense. Much madness is divinest sense to a discerning eye. Much sense the starkest madness. 'Tis the majority in this as all prevails. Assent, and you are sane. Demur, and you're straightway dangerous, and handled with a chain. Emily Dickinson's Much Madness is Divinest Sense. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the A-Infos Radio Project. Also at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize. And I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.